We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning, and want to welcome District 4 congressional candidate Josh Kimbrell, a fellow talk show host you may recognize from the market. Hey, Josh.
Well, good morning, Tara. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? Welcome to the show. Appreciate you joining us.
I'm glad to be with you. It's a good Monday morning.
Okay, I'm going to dive right in. You are elected. Congratulations. It is your first day in office. All the furniture has been moved in. What is the most important thing to you? What are you going to do first?
End trillion-dollar deficits. We've got to end the trillion-dollar deficits. This is something that we were outraged about, trillion-dollar deficits under President Obama, and now our Republican Congress is trying to, is looking like they're on track this year to run another trillion-dollar deficit, and the President and White House Budget Director Mulvaney are trying to cut the budget, cut spending, and Congress keeps passing these $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bills. So my first order of business would be to cut the federal budget. In other words, reintroduce what Mick Mulvaney tried to do in 2011, which is cut the federal budget, cap it as a percentage of the economy, and balance the budget. We've got to end these deficits or it's game over.
Do you support the tax cut that President Trump led the way on and Republicans voted for in Congress?
Absolutely. People who say that tax cuts lead to deficits, they're wrong. The Laffer curve proved that wasn't true. When you cut taxes, revenues go up to Washington because a smaller percentage of a bigger economic pie is better than a bigger percentage of a smaller pie. And every time we've ever cut taxes and reduced income taxes, we've seen a growth in the economy. That's proven to be true now. And I don't view that as what's driving the deficit. I think entitlement programs without reform are. I think not fully repealing Obamacare is. These kinds of things have to be addressed if we're going to reduce spending. But tax cuts are good for the economy and good for the budget.
Well, you said that that tax cuts are good for the economy, good for the budget. They grow the budget. And I would assume that would work on the local level, too. And I just got to ask you, I mean, last year you led the fight for a tax hike in Spartanburg County. You held a press conference with the Democrat Party, the local chamber. You were the head of the Republican Party at the time, campaigning for a 1 cent sales tax hike. But, I mean, I have a flyer from your campaign where you say you fought a property tax hike, but you didn't mention the part on your campaign flyer where you fought for the 1 cent tax hike. I mean, wouldn't you want to cut taxes in Spartanburg County to spur the economy? Like you said, you want to do it in the federal government?
Well, there's a difference between income taxes and sales taxes. In fact, Tara, I think that the two worst forms of taxation are property taxes. I'd put property tax number one because property tax, in my view, is nothing more than a permanent land lease. All it does is take people's property, put it into the government's hands. If you don't make one payment, you lose your land. I think property taxes are offensive. I think they're an affront to the American Revolution. And then income taxes, especially progressive income taxes, are a punishment on success. And so those are the two most onerous forms in my view. There is a difference between tax cuts at the federal level and a local consumption tax that sunsets. And to say that I support a tax hike, I think, is misleading. What I have said, and what the situation we were faced with in Spartanburg County last year, it really ties back to the local government fund. And I think you've talked about that on your show, that really since 2008, the South Carolina legislature has illegally, in my view, withheld local government funds from the counties. This means hundreds of millions of dollars across our state that were local sales taxes collected at the county level that were supposed to be handed back to the counties to fund state mandates, state magistrate courts, state obligations, fund mandates that the state requires counties and local governments to do. And the state government has continued to leave those mandates on the counties while illegally withholding money. Well, that's created major fiscal stress on counties, particularly Spartanburg County. And we had a courthouse issue that's collapsing infrastructure. There are hundreds of millions of dollars of potential pending lawsuits against the county because of an unsafe work environment. The county council was trying to figure out how do we build a building. Justin Bradley, who's one of the most conservative members of county council, who has endorsed my campaign for Congress, he and I met about this many times. He and I and Roger Nutt and others trying to find ways to avoid any kind of property tax increase because there were majority of the council was for it. They wanted to increase property taxes in Spartanburg County. The votes were there, and they came to a compromise that if they could get legislation enacted for a 1 cent sales tax increase for 6 years, to pay for the infrastructure, that, namely the courthouse facility that's crumbling, that they would put that on a ballot referendum. If that passed, it would preclude a property tax from being considered. And that's what happened. And so we felt like it was a bad choice either way because of years of fiscal mismanagement prior to the current council and because of 8 years of illegally withholding local government funds from the state. We had a situation where the county could not afford to have even bonded the project. Some people have said, well, Josh, you should have supported allowing the county council just to go take out bonds. Well, first off, Tara, I just said I was against deficits and debt, so I don't like the idea of the county adding $200 million of debt service for future generations to pay, so I didn't like the bond option. But let's say that we liked that, that the county council in Spartanburg didn't have enough money to even pay the interest on the new bonds. So the only two ways to do it, and the infrastructure project that had to happen was some form of revenue increase, they said. And the problem with that would have been if it was a property tax hike, that would have been permanent. It would have been 10% at least, and it would have lasted the rest of my lifetime and would have fallen only on the shoulders of Spartanburg County voters and Spartanburg County citizens and property owners. And we felt like, okay, if the only way to avoid that is to pay a penny for 6 years and it sunsets, we said we support the referendum to the county. 66% of Spartanburg County residents voted for that in favor of the property tax. And I think if we have to pick our poison, I'd prefer that to the property tax permanent hike.
Well, yeah, but you the situation, Josh Kimbrell, and you are a candidate for the District 4, you know, the seat that's currently held by Trey Gowdy. But the thing is, I mean, you could say the same thing at the federal government level. Would you support a sales tax hike to balance our budget at the federal level? I mean, we're in much worse red ink than Spartanburg County would have been. And I mean,
no,
so you would vote for that? Yes, it is the same thing.
Not the same thing, Terry. I mean, you've got billions and billions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse at the federal level. You've got billions of dollars of mandates that the government puts, the federal government funds. You've got entitlement programs that are on unsustainable path. And there are trillions of dollars of revenue go into Washington every year. For them to tell us there's nowhere to cut is ludicrous. And that the fact is, they need to restructure entitlements to make sure we're not bankrupt in the country. They need to fully repeal Obamacare.
Did you guys do an audit in Spartanburg County to see if there was anywhere you could cut?
Did.
You tried to find somewhere to cut before you supported the tax increase.
Absolutely. I personally went through the budget documents with members of the county council. The problem is, could there have been places to cut? Only if the state allowed it. See, that's the problem right there. That's the difference between the state and the county and the federal government. The federal government is sovereign and can cut its spending, cut its own budget. The problem is most spending at the county level, particularly in Spartanburg County, it's true in most counties, is a lot of the stuff they have to pay for is mandated from the state. And so without the state cutting some of these mandates on the county, there was nowhere to cut it. Discretionary spending in Spartanburg County had been cut. And in fact, if you look at Spartanburg County, Tara, we had about 40-50% turnover of council members in the past decade. A lot of the liberals on the county council who kept trying to vote for property tax hikes were ousted. People like me helped oust them. And we haven't had a property tax increase in Spartanburg County in more than a decade. So I think we have to look at the...
Because you had a sales tax increase. But you were able
last year you had a 1 cent increase because of the building issue, but for 10 years prior to that, we haven't had any kind of property tax hike, and we just avoided one again. So, I mean, the point is, it would have been a 10% property tax increase that was permanent, and this was something the citizens of the county voted on. It does sunset, and there's no way the county council can't renew this tax without it being a referendum, and frankly, I trust the voters of the county much more than I trust the members of the county council. So it's not the same things at the federal level at all.
District 4 congressional candidate Josh Kimbrell joins us on the hot seat today. It's the hottest seat in South Carolina. Anybody willing to sit down with me gets kudos from us for not being afraid of their constituents. There are many who will not sit in the seat he is sitting in today. Welcome back to the show, Josh.
Well, Tara, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I got to ask you about this. You got a hit on this by Fitz News. You wrote and I talked about this on my Facebook page. You wrote a pro amnesty editorial back in 2014 supporting the Gang of Eight's amnesty immigration plan. You have said recently there should be no amnesty granted to people who knowingly violated American immigration law. Yet back then, you said America needs, these are your words, needs comprehensive immigration reform like Senator Marco Rubio has proposed, which provides a pathway to citizenship to undocumented immigrants currently in the country. What has changed for you between then and now?
First off, I think that editorial was you may have the date right and I'm wrong, but I think it was 2013 when it first was proposed, and that would have been the year after President Obama proposed DACA. Because in 2012, President Obama, of course, initiated DACA, as a, in my view, as an election scheme. He did that to, frankly, try to win some votes and fire up the Hispanic community ahead of his reelection campaign. It was a cynical kind of politics. So Senator Rubio had, in 2010, campaigned against granting a blanket amnesty of any sort. And, of course, this is the same Senator Rubio that Jim DeMint at one time praised as, he said he would rather have 49 Marco Rubios in the Senate than 60 Arlen Specters, although I'm not sure Rubio hasn't become Arlen Specter now. But in 2013, I thought, okay, good, this is good. Rubio was an anti-amnesty guy. He was an anti-grant blanket amnesty to people candidate in 2010, and maybe this is an answer to President Obama in 2012. I felt like there was a chance, even with a Democratic president, we might prevent a flat-out amnesty of 12 to 13 million people. And when it first was proposed, I thought, let's see what happens. Now, as time went along, it became pretty painfully clear it was the same rehashed stuff from 2006, 2007. It was the same exact bill with a new guy proposing it. It was still going to be ultimately not require anybody to leave the country and reapply. At one point, he said that it would, that it would require people to leave the country and reapply. And so it was became the same bill that President Bush and Senator McCain and Senator Graham had pushed in 2006, 2007, which I didn't support. So. And also, Tara, so first off, I think I've been consistent on immigration. I was hopeful there for a little bit that we might actually be able to prevent the DACA executive order and President Obama from granting a blanket amnesty. But then after it became pretty clear it was a rehash of 2006, I wasn't for it. Also, I got married to a first-generation legal immigrant. And my wife, Lilia, is from Ukraine. She was born and raised in Ukraine. At a time, it was still under Soviet communism. She grew up in her early years in the era, the shadow of the Soviet Union, and wanted to become an American citizen. She applied to come here at the age of 19, was granted a work visa, came to America with nothing. I think she had like $100 on her, and had to learn the English language, pay $24,000 over the course of 10 years in legal fees to become a citizen, pass a citizenship exam. And I can tell you today, she's a patriotic Christian conservative Republican, and she did it the right way. Her family, I've said this at debates.
Well, but let me stop you for a sec. But hold on. Okay, you're right. The date of this is 2013. But again, that is after the Gang of Eight bill had been introduced. And in your words, Mr. Kimbrell, contradict what you just told me. America needs, I'm going to read this as you, America needs comprehensive immigration reform like Senator Marco Rubio has proposed. The Gang of Eight bill was already out at that time. I don't know how you say you don't know what was in it. Which provides a pathway to citizenship to undocumented immigrants currently in the country. So you knew it provided a pathway to citizenship and you were fine with it.
Well, don't misconstrue what I said. I'm listening to what you wrote. And I'm not arguing with what I wrote. It was 5 years ago. So I don't remember word for word what I wrote, but I believe you're reading it. That's fine. The point is, in 2013, Senator Rubio was saying at the time, they were still working on the bill. There was no formal vote on that bill at that point in time. And he said that there was going to be a provision for people who had to leave the country and go back and try to come back in. That's what he said. That's not what the bill ultimately did, which whenever they got around to the vote on it, those amendments never got added. It never got voted on. And, of course, I ended up wouldn't have supported the bill when it was going to be a rehash of 2006, 2007. That's not a contradiction.
But it is. I mean, can I read it to you again? I mean, you're contradicting yourself right now on the radio, Josh Kimbrell.
I heard what you said.
America needs comprehensive immigration reform like Senator Marco Rubio has proposed, which provides a pathway to citizenship to undocumented immigrants. You knew it was in there. You supported it.
The pathway to citizenship, as he said in 2013, he said then would have required people to leave the country and come back in. That's what he said was going to ultimately be in the bill. Now, I'm not arguing that's not what actually was in the bill, which is why I didn't support it in the end. And I don't support it now. And if there was an attempt now to go back and try to grant amnesty to people, to allow people to stay in the country who knowingly broke the law, I wouldn't support that. And as I just said, also, my position's become even tighter on it, even harder on it, by having married a woman who had to go through it the right way. I mean, back at Christmas of last year, 2017's Christmas, my sister-in-law, who still lives in Ukraine, tried to come to America for Christmas. We had to sign guarantee forms, and I had to sign off that I was going to pay for all of her meals, know where she was going to stay, drive her to all of her appointments. And I thought, wow, this country, this entire Democratic Party, and frankly, a lot of folks in our party who say, all right, let's just let anybody come here when they want to and have open borders. And I can't even have a sister-in-law come for Christmas without me signing away my life. And I told Lily, I said, honey, hell, next time tell her to go to Mexico, run across to Texas, we'll pick her up. The situation is out of control. Having married a first-generation legal immigrant last year, I see much more clearly now than I ever have how bad and screwed up the system is, and I will not reward people who broke ahead of folks like my wife in line. That's the simple answer.
Well, but it seems like you have supported the Gang of Eight, not just then. I mean, you talk about Rubio.
I just answered the question, Tara. In 2013, it seemed like it was an opportunity to avoid President Obama doing stuff by executive order. Obama issued in 2012 an executive order saying he was going to grant legal status to millions of people automatically. Of course, that was DACA, and he said it was only going to affect kids of illegal immigrants who came here under no fault of their own. You and I both know that's not true, and it became a hobby horse for amnesty for tens of millions of people over time, and it would have been done by executive order. I thought at the time, here's Senator Rubio, who again, Senator DeMint had said was a conservative stalwart back in 2010. When Rubio ran in 2010, he said he would not support granting immediate pathway to citizenship or amnesty to people who knowingly broke the law. He obviously has moved away from that issue. And in 2013, I thought he was still going to be true to that. And I thought, okay, if he's supporting this, it must not be the same rehashed mess from 2006 and 2007, which it turned out to be. So
but
I
Josh
can say
Kimbrough,
that writing
let me...
that editorial was a mistake. Sure.
Okay.
Writing the editorial is a mistake.
Okay. We change our views sometimes. We all do. But then in May of 2014, you joined Senator Lindsey Graham's campaign. You were on, you were part of his campaign. You were part of his pro-family, pro-life leader coalition that he had. And your job, according to this press release, as part of the Lindsey Graham campaign, was to focus on building support for Senator Graham among pro-family and pro-life voters throughout the state. So you're campaigning for one of these Gang of Eight guys. And you're on his campaign, Josh Kimbrough, 2014.
Here's what happened in 2014 on that. That was, of course, pain-capable legislation. Senator Graham was trying to push for pain-capable legislation at the federal level, and I supported that. I supported what he tried to do on the federal level with regard to the pain-capable bill, which, of course, in South Carolina, we just passed. I think it was signed last year, year before last. And I thought, okay, great. If we can end 20-week abortions in the United States at the federal level, great. That was a good idea. So I had openly supported his position on that. I was asked by a group of pro-life leaders in South Carolina if I would support a pro-life coalition that supported the senator's position on the pain-capable bill. I said that I would. They put my name on the list, and that ended up being a flat-out endorsement of the campaign, and that wasn't my intention. And I told him at the time, I said, look, I don't think this is the right I talked to some friends of mine. I said, now it looks like I flat-out endorsed the senator on everything, when I truly supported him on the pain-capable situation. And if you go back and look at my contributions history, I've never given money to him, and I didn't raise any money for him, and I wasn't an active part of the campaign. So I don't deny they used my name in 2014. Mm-hmm. I had acquiesced to do so on the pain-capable bill that became a much more broad blanket sort of endorsement than I intended it to be, and I should have asked for it to be removed at the time. But I never contributed money to him, I never raised any money for him, and I never went door-to-door campaign for him.
I got another question for you, Josh Kimbrough. Did you vote for President Trump in the primary? Or if not, who did you vote for?
I supported Senator Cruz in the primary. And I was actually an early Rick Perry supporter. I supported Perry because I'd supported Perry in 2012. So I'd supported Perry in 2012, and I supported Perry again in 2016 until he dropped out. It was actually in the 2015 when he dropped out. I did not vote for Trump in the primary. I voted for Cruz, but then in the end, I, of course, voted for Trump against Hillary Clinton for president.
I got a question, too, about this Lindsey Graham thing. You know, in terms of you know, I realize you say you didn't want to be on his campaign after, you know, you realize they use your name. But, you know, when you initially, I guess, agreed to it, did it bother you that he had voted for Sonia Sotomayor in 2009?
Yeah,
who supported abortion?
Absolutely.
To be on the Supreme Court?
Sure. And I know you're on a different radio station, of course, but if anybody goes and listens to any radio archives they ever did on any of that, I vehemently oppose that. I did support the gangs he joined to try to ram through liberal appointees. I never supported the logic that you vote for Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor in hopes that sometimes the Democrats might vote for one of our guys, because that never happens. And when you extend an olive branch to liberals, more often than not, they jerk it out of your hand and whack you upside the head with it. So I thought that was flawed logic from the beginning. And, you know, I listened to his arguments on that, and I heard what he said, but I didn't agree with him. And even in an interview when he was on the air with me once, he and I got in a fairly heated exchange, and I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it a fight, but pretty close to one, over those judges. That's one area I think he's been phenomenally weak his entire tenure.
We're talking to District 4 candidate Josh Kimbrell. Want to welcome you back to the show. I got to ask you this question. Sure. And you knew I was going to ask about your divorce case. I covered a lot of family cases in family court. And so I know as a reporter that having an accusation of sexual or physical abuse in a contentious custody case is actually not that unusual. It happens a lot, and the judges realize that and have a higher level of skepticism usually. So it was two things in your case that are highly unusual. Number one, you got arrested at one point for allegedly sexually abusing your son. But number two, a judge did something else highly unusual in your case, and that is award you full custody. That's pretty rare these days from judges who normally, if both parents want custody, will split that somehow. Yet you got full custody and your wife got visitation. Usually a court does not do that unless they want to manage the other spouse. So can you walk me through this case? Because I've never seen one like it. Why? You know what I can't understand? Why were you arrested the second time? What made them think that you might have sexually abused your son? How did this happen?
Well, Tara, I'd like to know that myself. And in fact, we nearly filed a lawsuit against the city of Greenville, except for it cost me $100,000 to do it. So number one, let's start with the arrest piece, and then we'll back up to what actually happened with my former wife, because it's really, there's even more to it than what you just said. So number one, we felt like she made multiple allegations multiple times over the course of 4 or 5 years, ranging from everything. She said, I tried to starve the baby to death, and I tried to boil him to death. And she claimed that she caught everything she could say. She threw it out there just so she could win a custody case. It was a disgusting, defamatory, ridiculous set of attacks all along. So in 2014, when she finally found somebody to go along with it, we found out there was a very young detective, a female detective with the city of Greenville, who had just become a detective. And she'd been on the job maybe, I want to say, 6 weeks. She didn't do her due diligence. She didn't do her job. I don't mind saying that flat out. And she bought the sob story of my former wife without looking through the court file. We said, look at the court file. She's made allegations for 4 years, and none of these have ever been true. It's all a bunch of crap, for lack of a better way of putting it. But she didn't do any of those things. She just emotionally decided to get involved. And whenever my lawyers asked for discovery, you know, asked for the evidence they supposedly had, they said, we don't have anything to give you. They never gave us anything. Discovery turned up nothing. There was never anything my son ever said or did to indicate that this ever happened, because, of course, it didn't happen. He went through 3 forensic interviews, not one, not two, but 3, all of which were totally clear. And the city detective never had any evidence, nothing. We could never get discovery. So we never even went to a preliminary hearing, Tara. That's the crazy part. There was never an arraignment. There was never a hearing. We never had a criminal court hearing, ever. It never went that far. Now, once everything was dismissed, not only did my former wife lose custody of our child, she did lose custody. I have full legal custody, and now she gets visitation for a year, at least a year, maybe longer. She had to go through a DSS treatment plan to even see our child. She could not see my son without a state supervisor sitting in the room because of what was called substantial risk of mental injury. So the finding made against my former wife was that she tried to coach our child into saying stuff, which he never did in any interview he ever had. But they caught her for coaching. She was trying to force our child to say things to defame me so she could leave the state. She had started dating a young man before our divorce was finalized. I don't know how far back that had gone, but she was dating a person before our marriage was divorced. Our divorce was finalized, and he joined the Air Force, and she needed to leave South Carolina to move to Texas to Dyess Air Base, where he was going to be stationed. And that's what prompted the allegation. The court denied her motion for relocation. She thought, well, what the heck? Let's just accuse him of sex abuse, see what happens. It was the most egregious thing that could have ever happened to somebody. It's the worst allegation you could make, but it was completely patently false. And I believe our court system fundamentally failed, or at least the family court got it right. And we never went to court on the supposed criminal charges, but I can tell you that I feel like the Greenville City Police Department botched it. That detective should have been fired, and I stand by that to this day.
Joining us this morning on the hot seat is candidate Josh Kimbrell, who is running for the District 4 seat currently held by Trey Gowdy. Welcome back, Josh Kimbrell.
It's been a pleasure to be with you today, Tara.
Yep. Okay. Top, because I want you to be able to get this in. Top three things you would do if elected that are the most important to you. Go ahead.
I want to eliminate, as I've said at the beginning of the program, eliminate $1 trillion deficits, get a plan to pay down the national debt. I consider that all one. I want to make sure we secure the border, end illegal immigration, and make sure folks like my wife, who are legal immigrants, get their rightful chance to come the right way. And then I want to work to reform entitlement programs and end Obamacare so that we can ensure the country doesn't go off the fiscal cliff and become a very large version of Greece. Those would be the top three things I'd want to do immediately.
Would the Obamacare, would that include repealing it completely?
I believe in a complete repeal. I think we got off the rails of the whole replace stuff. You know, they kept saying repeal. Back in 2010, and in the first election cycle, Republicans took the House. It was, we're going to repeal Obamacare and defund it. And then somewhere along the way, they said, let's repeal and replace. And of course, they didn't tell us they were working to replace. They said, let's just repeal it. I believe in an outright repeal, regardless of replacement. We can deal with any kind of health care issues later, but we ought to repeal the Obamacare law in its entirety.
What about DACA? There's been a lot of talk about some sort of version of the bill that legalizes the 700,000 plus. What is your stance on that?
You know, DACA, for me, I don't think we should even have that conversation until we end chain migration and fully secure the border. Because the problem when DACA conversations came up last year, initially it started at 700,000. Then it moved up to like 2 million. Then somebody mentioned to me like 9-10 million. I don't know how they come up with these numbers. I mean, how do you go from 700,000 to 10 million? That makes it a little fishy in my view. I don't think DACA discussions need to even be had until we reform the legal immigration system to end the chain migration and secure the border completely. And I think that ought to include not only the wall, but making sure we keep the National Guard down there on permanent rotation. I think we need troops, keep the troops on the border, rotate National Guard units on the border, because they certainly are doing a great job buttressing Border Patrol.
Josh Kimbrell, also want to ask you, will you vote for, you've talked a lot about balancing the budget and, you know, ending the debt, getting us on the right track. Well, the problem is that Republicans in Congress keep voting for these horribly unbalanced budgets and then using excuses like, well, you know, it had some national defense stuff in it. I had to vote for it. Will we hear that from you? You will commit to, if it's not a balanced budget, that, you know, a budget with no borrowing, will you vote for it?
I'm voting against budgets that run up $1 trillion deficits, period. I mean, I don't care what sweeteners they add. That's the problem now. We get a lot of sweeteners and people say, I got to vote for it for this. Two things for me are the litmus test. One, does it continue to dig the hole deeper for future generations to pay? And number two, does it include funding for Planned Parenthood? Because here we are, 9 years into a Republican majority, Planned Parenthood funding still in there for $500,000. So if it includes funding for Planned Parenthood and it continues to dig our debt hole, I'm voting against it, period.
Talking to Josh Kimbrell, who is running for the Trey Gowdy seat. Josh Kimbrell, anything else you want to add? I'm going to let you make your pitch here and then tell us where we can find you online.
Well, look, I'm a relatable guy. I'm a relatable representative for this district. I'm not coming into this as some wealthy guy out of touch with the people I'm trying to lead. I'm a self-made businessman. I've run a successful business. I know what it's like to sign the front and the back of a paycheck. I understand what it's like to have to balance a budget and live within one's means. Also, for 10 years, I did a radio program on another station and had a lot of experience analyzing every policy issue you could think of. I was a national Fox News panelist and commentator dealing with Democrats on every issue at the national level and the national spotlight. And we're used to, as Trey Gowdy being our representative, having an outsized influence in the 4th District. He's a national figure. That's rare for a member of Congress. I think I'm the most likely guy to go to Congress and continue to give the 4th District this outsized influence and voice on the national stage and national issues. I will do that, and I'll be a proven, consistent conservative on fiscal, social, and national security issues. And I hope people check out the platform, check out my experience. VoteJoshKimbrell.com is our website. It's VoteJoshKimbrell.com, and I was very thankful to come on here and talk with you today and make the case.
All right. You are Josh Kimbrell, and we really appreciate you joining us this morning. He, again, is running for the seat that Trey Gowdy is vacating, the District 4 congressional seat. Thank you, Josh Kimbrell. All right. Let's jump on the text line, see what's going on there. Tara, would you please announce what time the doors open tonight at Zen? 5:30. And it's first come, first serve. So you don't have to have the bucks or be a special person to get in there. You just got to get there earliest to get the seats. It will be packed. Or you can watch it, the governor's debate that Bobby Mack and I are hosting on our Facebook page. We're going to live stream it also on our website, 1063WORD.com. Or you can listen live tonight on the radio station. You'll hear it that way as well. Should be Pretty interesting. Unfortunately, the governor will not be joining us, which is deeply disappointing to me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.